Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Here's something about our recent asylum seekers that you might not know. While the vast majority of the recent arrivals, somewhere around 85%, according to The New Yorker, are from Latin American countries, a growing number are coming from African nations, flying to Central America and then traveling through the southern border into the United States. This is in part due to the crackdown on migration in Europe. On December 20th, the European Union signed a pact to facilitate the deportation of asylum seekers and limit migration to the EU bloc. Many far-right politicians in various countries there are also running and winning on the promise to curb migration. Here in the U.S., the number of African asylum seekers apprehended at the southern border jumped from around 13,000 in 2022 to over 58,000 last year, according to the New York Times. The majority of those migrants were from Mauritania, Senegal, Angola, and Guinea. Joining me now to discuss these trends and the special needs of African migrants and how his organization is responding to meet them is Amaha Kasa, founder and executive director of African Communities Together, which is a national group supporting African immigrants with a headquarters in Harlem. They're also in D.C. and Philadelphia. Amaha, thanks so much for coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Very glad to be with you.
And before we dig into some of this recent news and invite callers in, can you first tell us a bit more about your organization, African Communities Together, and what you do?
Sure. So our organization, we just celebrated our 10th anniversary. And as you said, we are a national organization of, by, and for immigrants from Africa and their families. We do a lot of different things, including a lot of direct service provision. Most of that is immigration legal, but we help people with a whole range of urgent needs. And we also are a membership-based organization. We run leadership programs, and we're an advocate as well in the courts, in state and federal government. We advocate on policy issues that affect our communities.
So last summer, as many of our listeners know, Texas Governor Greg Abbott started sending busloads of migrants to New York City. Can you tell us a bit about what your organization saw at the beginning of that and how it's been changing over the months?
Absolutely. So over the months that kind of secondary migration from border states, particularly Texas, has been coming to New York, we have just been steadily overwhelmed, to be frank, by the number of community members seeking assistance. We are currently getting over 250 primarily African. We serve, lots of different, countries of origin. So we get people, of course, also coming in from Central America or the Middle East or other countries. But the vast majority of people who find us and who need assistance from our team are West African migrants. So we're seeing people coming from Guinea, Mauritania has been a big, there's been a big influx of folks coming from Mauritania, Burkina Faso, other parts of West Africa. We've always, historically, most people who were coming to us were long-term New Yorkers, had been living in New York for some time and heard about us through word of mouth. Like a lot of other immigrant-serving organizations, we have had to shift drastically to meet the needs of these, kind of newest New Yorkers.
Yeah. Now, let me invite listeners who may be among those new arrivals from Africa or may know anybody who is, to call in, or even anyone else from especially those four countries who've been getting named as, you know, the senders of most of the recent African migrants coming through the southern border after they get to this hemisphere. And so, listeners, if you are from or connected to Mauritania, Senegal, Angola, or Guinea, you're going to get first priority on the phones now. Help us report this story of why people are making that incredibly perilous and difficult journey going from any of those countries first to Central America and then making that perilous trip that so many Central Americans make, somehow walking or however they go, up to the United States and coming in, and then 58,000 in the last year into New York City after that. 212-433-WNYC. We invite your stories. We invite stories of people you know. We invite your questions. We invite your take on what's going on in the home countries to drive so many people to take these risks. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. Call or text for Amaha Kasa, founder and executive director of African Communities Together. 212-433-WNYC. 212-433-9692. And Amaha, if that number in the New York Times is right, 58,000 new such arrivals in 2023, that's more than 1,000 people a week. Is that what you're seeing at African Communities Together?
Well, we're seeing that number, us and the other organizations. There's a lot of other organizations that are really valiantly trying to respond to the needs of these new African arrivals. We're one of the largest, but there's other, you know, a group called Africana that's been doing incredible work on the front lines, meeting the buses, African Services Committee, other groups that have been first responders. But a lot of those folks have come to us, and it really has been an order of magnitude more than anything we've seen in the previous, you know, 8 or 9 years, including even during COVID, right, when we had a lot of people who were in need of emergent services because, you know, businesses were closed, public accommodations were closed. So this, you know, we were at one level trying to do rapid response during COVID and have had to kind of level up again to meet this, the current influx of folks. Often with, you know, just a delayed and really insufficient level of response from certainly from the federal government, but really there's been gaps at the state and local level as well.
I wonder if you could help give our listeners kind of a short course on what's going on in some of these countries driving so many people to take this desperate act. Mauritania, Northwest Africa, Senegal is right there. Guinea is right nearby. Angola is further south. But, you know, most New Yorkers without connections to the region hardly hear anything about Mauritania. What the heck is happening in Mauritania that they're driving so many people to do this?
Yeah, well, there's this, there's a poem that people may have encountered, which says nobody, by Warsan Shire, that says nobody leaves home. No one leaves home unless home is the mouth of a shark. I think that's really true, right? A lot of African migration, people are migrating because they don't have great options to remain. And so in some cases, we're talking about countries that have experienced political violence, war, conflict, inter-ethnic violence, those kind of forces that are driving people. A lot of times with Mauritania in particular, it's because people are members of a group that is discriminated against or persecuted in their country of origin. You're seeing people who are considered to be Black Mauritanians and who often experience racism up to and including forced labor and slavery. And there's, you know, well-documented kind of human rights reports on this in Mauritania, which is why we've been urging the federal government to extend temporary protected status, humanitarian protection to Mauritania. But so far, you know, that's not something that the federal government has done. You see
so
other
that's
places.
That's more like more Arabic, ethnically Arabic people persecuting more ethnically Black African. Am I putting that right?
Effectively, yes. Yeah. Sometimes the categories don't always map onto how we in the U.S. understand ethnicity. But yes, certainly people who, you know, we would identify as Black are on the receiving end of that persecution. But yeah.
Let's take a call from a listener who wants to say something about Guinea. Namina in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hi, Namina.
Hi, good morning, Brian. Happy New Year to you and your staff and your wonderful guest. Thank you, sir, for this topic. It's so needed to talk about. I'm originally from Freetown, Sierra Leone, West Africa. My mother is, and my father is Guinean. And if you just said something about, you know, they will kill them because of their religion or just because they're Black. And the last president that was in Guinea, that's what he was doing. He just killed. If you are dark and you're Muslim, you just killed. You can't read it. And people were just running away. Children, mothers were killed. And people were just running away. And they're following their rainbow where they could go. Sometimes nobody wants to leave their homeland. But just like you said, they killed them for no reason. And they were running away to save their life. And they just go. They just follow their rainbow. Wherever they go, if even they deport them, they will still come back and just they're running away for their lives. You don't know what to do. Remember when the Blood Diamond happened in Sierra Leone? That's what most of our family, everybody was just running away. Uh-huh. They're just killing them. If you're a different tribe, they kill you. If you're Black Muslim, they just kill you, your own. And that's what's going on. And I thank you so much for this topic. I wish the news was there. I was telling the young lady to answer the phone. And I said, when you go into the village, you see it. Not in the city, but when you go into Guinea, the village, you see the atrocity. But the news is not there. The media is not there. You know, so I'm so grateful and thankful that
you,
you're getting
Namina.
Having
thank
this
you.
Conversation.
And thank you for
thank
amplifying
you.
It.
Yeah, thank
and
you, Namina.
And I actually
well
want
said.
To take another caller with ties to Guinea, who I think is going to say they're working with some recent asylum seekers, Mamadou in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hello, Mamadou.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Doing okay. Thank you very much. Tell us your story.
Thank you. I'm from Guinea, and I've been working with some of the asylum seekers from Guinea, especially in my community. So when I realized they were coming like 6-7 months ago, and we did not have any like organizations or group like to help them out or to advise them on anything, I came up with an idea of creating a WhatsApp group chat, and with two of my friends, we called it Wallami Walle, which means in Fulani, like, help me, I help you. And so basically what we've done in that group is like to share information, to advise them what they should be aware of, you know, and help them out with getting New York City IDs or sharing information where they should go for ESL classes. We helped them a lot, and we've had now an office where we, you know, taking some of them to help them with Medicaid or New York City ID applications. But we still need more resources, but I just want to emphasize, helping out these immigrants is highly recommended by everyone. There is much more we can do individually or within a group.
Mamadou, thank you very much. And I'll follow up on that with you in a minute, Amaha, about things that are needed. But I want to go next to Emily in Manhattan, who I think says she's a doctor in an emergency room in the Bronx, seeing more people from West Africa. Emily, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah, hi. Yeah, like you said, I'm a doctor in the South Bronx and I work in the emergency department. And we've also had quite an increase of people from West Africa coming into the department over the last year or so, which presents a new kind of widespread variety of challenges because a lot of these people are coming up, as you said, through South America. But in addition to that, they're also bringing, it's a whole underreported thing, as you've been saying, because we hear a lot about the migrants from South America, and we see a lot of those migrants as well. But we do see a big proportion of West Africans come in, and especially as an emergency provider, it's a very interesting thing to happen because we get all these people who speak all these different varieties of languages. And just in terms of how we treat these people, we have a hard time communicating with them sometimes because there's all these people coming in from tribal languages that we can't even communicate with them anymore. So it is, we've seen this just in the emergency department on the ground, and it is something that is happening and is underreported.
I'm glad you're helping us amplify it. I'm curious if, besides communicating with whoever's coming in to treat their ER medical needs, if you're hearing any stories of why they fled their countries.
Not so much. A lot of it is, as you were saying, religious persecution or ethnic persecution that has caused them. And a lot of them have come up through South America, as you see. So we see this really interesting demographic where these people come in and sometimes they speak a bit of Spanish. Sometimes they speak a little French. But I find it very interesting because they are coming up through South America, as you said. Mm-hmm. And along with that, it's the hospital which I worked at, interestingly, is the largest, we treat the most malaria out of any hospital in the United States, because people do come in and then they seek medical attention, and it's not like they're getting malaria here in the U.S., but they're coming here with malaria, and it is a sad thing to see, and they've been undertreated or not treated at all because they've been trying to migrate up from South America or just from other West African countries.
Emily, thank you so much for your work and for your call. And interesting that she talks about language. And the previous caller, Mamadou from Guinea, was describing how one of the services they're trying to provide is English as a second language classes.
Language, it's impossible to overstate how important that need is, right? Africa is one of the most, the most linguistically diverse place in the world. There are literally hundreds and thousands of African languages. And for the most part, up until recently, even basic access to French and Arabic was often missing in public, in public services and publicly funded services. Language services would provide Spanish and, maybe a couple of Asian languages and call it a day. And as the doctor was saying, that's really insufficient. And there's good news and bad news. I think that we've started to meet the demand for language services. We actually helped launch a language services worker cooperative called Afrilingual, which is a kind of worker-owned agency providing language services. That's terrific news. Unfortunately, we had the city council allocated $5 million to expand language services, and the Adams administration cut that funding in the most recent city budget. So unfortunately, during a time when we need to be growing language services, we're seeing some moves backwards.
That's a paradox, right? The city says it has to cut services because it's spending so much money on migrants, but some of those cuts are to organizations like yours that serve the migrants.
Exactly. And help them move into self-sufficiency, help them, ultimately these are cost savings that we can realize by getting people legal status, getting people help with their employment applications, helping them, move into stable housing, all of that.
Here's a caller from another of the four countries that a lot of people are coming from now, Elijah in Manhattan, who told our screener he's Senegalese. Elijah, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Brian, and thank you for your guests. I just wanted to ask one question, how we can help other Senegalese. We've been here for a while, and I'm seeing my brothers and sisters struggling on the street. They don't have no place to stay. They stay in these mosques, you know, I mean, 100, 200 of them. Pretty sure they don't have no place to take shower. They here for 4 months, 5 months, nothing. They picking a battle on the street. What advice would you give us, guys, that, you know, we can have access to it to help them? Because it's so sad. It's so sad. They here already. It's going to take them time to integrate. So we need advice what we can do, where we can get access to help them. Because I know it's overwhelming. Suddenly, you know, thousands of them come and they new in this country, struggle to communicate, you know, so it's overwhelming to our community too. So I'm sitting here and helpless. You don't know what to do.
Helpless, but also I hear your beautiful heart in trying to help people. Amaha, any advice for Elijah as he's asking for, or advice to the listeners as a whole on how they can help if they want to help? Because I'm sure a lot of people are wondering that.
Yeah, I think what Elijah said and what Mamadou said earlier is so true. A lot of the people who are getting help right now, it's not even, you know, agencies like ours or the city or these things. A lot of the help is coming from these frontline mosques, churches that are where right now they're putting people up on floors. You know, we've tried to you know, sort of support some of those folks who are housing people informally, and the community really has been heroic in its response to arriving community members, particularly these where we already have a lot of people in New York, like the Senegalese community, the Guinean community. I think we need to demand action from the city, and the city also needs to demand more leadership from the state and federal government. You know, I think if this were taking place at the southern border, I think we would be seeing billions of dollars from FEMA to provide, you know, short-term housing. And because it's happening in New York, you know, I think the federal government has been able to kind of wash its hands of the situation. You know, we haven't filed the lawsuit against the federal government the way that I think you might see a more hostile, you know, mayor or governor do. So I think we need that. And I think we need both short-term solutions like vouchers to get people into housing. And I think we need long-term solutions like your last segment was talking about, the, you know, the structural crisis of affordable housing.
Yes.
We need to be converting hotels and office space into affordable housing. Private charity can help. We've been able to get people into some short-term transitional housing thanks to a grant from Airbnb. But those things are just a drop in the bucket compared to the scale of the need. People need housing until they can get on their feet. The work authorizations are taking too long. And when people have, if people have that, they can become self-sufficient, like, you know, tens of millions of immigrant New Yorkers have before them.
Before you go, can you just give us a little bit more of a sort of political geography lesson? These four countries who are the big four African countries from where so many of the migrants to New York are coming, and it still blows my mind to think that they're flying to Central America and making that treacherous journey up through Mexico and all of that and crossing the border and then winding up in New York. And 58,000 people have done that in the last year, according to the New York Times, from these four countries. And for people who don't know the map, you know, one more time, just going from south to north this time, they're all on the west coast of Africa, Angola, then up through Guinea, Senegal, and Mauritania, the most north of the four. But there are other countries in Africa where there are also desperate situations. Sudan is in the news. Congo is in the news. You know, others. Is it a matter of geography that even though they're an ocean away, these are the four, these countries are the closest to the Americas, because they're on the west coast of Africa? Is that why it's these countries and it's not Sudan, which is in crisis, or elsewhere?
Yeah, and I would say, I know that Angola has been a big sending country. We've actually, in terms of our communities, we're actually seeing more also from Burkina Faso. There's a big Burkinabe community. I would say...
Also in West Africa, though not on the water, right?
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think most people, I think that it's complicated. There's, you know, in migration, you talk about push factors and pull factors. When there are short-term crises, sometimes it's actually places where you have, folks, sometimes the most vulnerable people don't make the crossing, right? Like, it takes a lot of, sort of initiative and maybe a little bit of money to buy a plane ticket to make these crossings. So sometimes it's people, a combination of desperation and an ability to move. Sometimes it's network effects, right, where people you know are leaving and you start to look around
because there are immigrant communities from those places here. That's a great point. As is the point you were just making before that, which we actually did part of a segment on just recently, how it is not the poorest people who are the immigrants from anywhere to anywhere generally, because it takes some resources to migrate at all. But there we leave it with Amaha Kasa, founder and executive director of African Communities Together. Now, listeners, you know something that many of you may not have known about our recent asylum seekers, that 58,000 of them in 2023, according to stats published in the New York Times, came not from Latin America or the Caribbean, but from Africa. Thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with everything that you're doing.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Thank you.